You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 98, Inside Out.
Triple them gum.
We'll make you smile.
Triple them gum.
It lasts a while.
Triple them gum.
We'll help you, mister, to punch that breath right in the kister.
Triple them gum.
Is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 150,000 audio titles for you to choose from. This episode, our pick is Creativity Inc. by Ed Catmull of Pixar. Now, this is a book that if you are interested in anything about Pixar, behind the scenes of Pixar, the making of the studio over time, or just how to run a business or an organization, Creativity Inc. is the book for you. It is amazing. We're going to talk about it in this episode. We're just going to talk about just a few paragraphs, and that's all the discussion is based around. Just imagine how much more discussion we will have from this book. And if you want to get on the action, definitely check it out. If you go to rotoscopers.com/audible, you can get a free audiobook of your choice. It's yours to keep forever. And trust me, this is one that you'll want forever. So again, go to rotoscopers.com/audible.
Welcome, welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I am your host, Mason Smith. I've got all my emotions and feelings ready to go. And so have my two lovely co-hosts, as always, Chelsea Robson and Morgan Stradling. Say hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello there.
Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. We are a show about our love for animation. Picture us in your mind, if you will. Close your eyes and picture three of your closest friends who are total nerds and love animation, all aspects of it. And we're all sitting on the couch talking about our favorite movies and giving our opinions, our feelings, our reviews, you know, trivia and awesome historical facts. Now open your eyes. Sadly, we are not physically there with you, but we're with you on the podcast.
I really hope you weren't driving at that point and you didn't actually close your eyes, because that would not be... We are not responsible for anything.
Yeah, we're not going to get sued. Not again.
Not again. I can't go back to jail.
Again. I can't go back to jail.
I'm free. I'm free. Dang it.
Dang it. Yay.
And if you just got all of those references, welcome.
Did you get
home.
A gold star?
Welcome home.
Welcome home. All right. So speaking of which, we're going to have a nerdy couch discussion because this is a special episode. Thanks to our wonderful Patreon subscribers, our wonderful Roto Nation, as they are called collectively, we are now at a level where we can go out and review new animated releases while they're still in theaters. That was something that we only did for maybe one release every year beforehand. But now, thanks to the support of our awesome patrons, all year when we get a new, you know, major release of an animated feature, then we are going to review it on the show. And so congratulations and thank you so much to our existing patrons. And if you're on the fence about being a patron, then I highly recommend you do it, because you get awesome Roto perks like you are listening to right now. I can't think of a better sales pitch.
You did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. And so unless you live in a, you know, under a rock, you know that the most recent animated release is Pixar's very own Inside Out. And that's the one that we're going to review today. So excited. The last Pixar film that we did right out of its theatrical release was Monsters University, right?
Yeah.
Yay!
Oh, yes. That's when Mason went to the theater, was surrounded by children.
Yay!
Heaven forbid.
Chelsea did a terrific job supplying the sound effects for that.
No,
that's
actually,
what it was like.
That week, I was moving to Nashville, and Morgan did the editing on that one.
Yeah, that's why that one was so good. Just let you know.
It's true.
Fight.
For the last 2 years, I've been trying so hard to get up to that standard.
It's not possible. Until
so strap yourselves in, because we're just going to go on this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making Just keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
I have a dream I hope will come true. You're here with me. And I'm here with you. I wish that the earth stayed the sky up above. Will send me someone to love.
When I went to the theater, there was an even mix of adults and children. We'll talk about that later. But the first thing we saw after the previews was Pixar's new animated short, Lava. I have a dream, my wish will come true. You're I wish I could play the ukulele just so I could just kind of walk around and sing that song, you know?
It's a great song.
You know how...
Lava.
That was cute. Everybody, like, chuckled when they heard that line. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what did y'all think?
I thought it was adorable. It was perfect. You know, everything you've come to expect from Pixar shorts, that they're funny. They're going to make you smile. They're going to have a great ending. They're going to make you go, aw. And that one did make me go, aw. Although I did really see a few minutes into it, which is basically halfway into it, I saw where it was going with the way that he was formed as a volcano and the way that she was. And I was like, yes, so cute. I like where this is going. And I liked the payoff. The animation was beautiful as well.
Oh, wasn't it? Remember how Blue Umbrella was such a technical achievement?
Absolutely.
Well, this one really, really turned up. Well, it's called procedural modeling, where you can do effects like very dense forests, you know, and all the trees are individual and you've got all these, you know, physics stuff going on. So, you know, excellent technology going there. But just like the creative aspect, how do you get a mountain, a volcano to sing? You know, what does it look like when a mountain sings a song? I pictured him having a deeper voice, not going to lie.
See?
But he kind of had that Hawaiian falsetto that's kind of a classic vibe, and so mm-hmm. I was fine with it.
Yes, that all the Pollys have that make you so jealous.
I know. Like,
why can you all sing and amazing, and how come you're not all superstars?
Why isn't there a Polynesian Coldplay? They would take the market of falsetto pop singing.
It's true.
Yeah, anyway, that's maybe I'll sponsor a Polynesian singing group for like The Voice or something. Yep.
So what do you think?
So I loved it. It was really nice because, well, at first we had seen the preview for this, you know, last year or almost 2 years ago, I guess. They put out a preview for this on YouTube, and it was just the very beginning of it. So you never got the payoff. You didn't see where it was going. You just got the first verse. And I just remember thinking, oh, that's nice. That looks cute. And then when it finally got there, I was like, oh, wow, that was really, really nice. I was with some friends, and one of my friends was just like, yeah, it really just gave you the feeling that, you know, love is something you just got to be patient for. And I'm just thinking, wow, you thought much deeper into this than I ever did. I really just saw the irony of, well, that sucks that they're facing the wrong way. But it was...
Oh, he was so sad.
He was so sad, and then he was under the water, and it was like, aw.
Then he was like, oh, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
That would have ruined it.
Yeah, it would have been. But, I mean, this is definitely in my top three.
Really? I was just going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Was this your favorite? Was this y'all one of y'all's favorite Pixar shorts?
No. No. For me, no. My
is that
favorite.
One of them?
Well, you know,
well,
one,
it's in your top three.
It's in my top three. But was this my favorite? No, it wasn't my favorite. Jerry's Game will always be my favorite.
Yes, me too.
Because, I mean.
Yeah, let's hear your top three, Chelsea.
Okay, so my first one definitely is going to be Jerry's Game because I just remember that being so. So iconic. I mean, then later on he makes a showing in Toy Story 2 and everyone's like, it's that guy!
He's for display only.
Yeah. And then, so that was my first one. And the second one was La Luna, which you could see right before, it was right before Brave, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was beautiful too, because the storyline, because it was the grandpa and the son, it was like, oh, that's so cute. And they're like sweeping up the stars. For me, those were the three, and Lava, I definitely put itself in there as like the top three that have really stayed in my mind. I would say number four would be Bounded. That would be the next one. But my top three are right there.
Well, okay. Let's see. Top three Pixar short films. Well, let's see. I'll go backwards. Number three is For the Birds. I really like that one.
And, as evidenced by your chuckling name.
my typical Mason chuckle. Yeah, I really like that one. It's silly. It's really cute. And it's about accepting those who are different and not being prideful. And then number two, The Blue Umbrella. I just really liked how that one came together from the music to, the powerful rendering and lighting that they achieved, and then just really subtle, cute characterization of everyday objects in the city that we may not even notice. And then number one is Presto. Oh my gosh, that thing was entertaining on a level that like Chuck Jones or Tex Avery could have pulled off. Like, just it wasn't necessarily slapstick, it was just hilarious action. And very, very creative on how they did all the gags with the rabbit and the hat. And I really enjoyed it. So, yeah. For the Birds, Blue Umbrella, and then Presto.
All right. So, my three. I need a little bit more time with Lava to be able to digest it and really see where it falls. So, I'm not going to include that in my top.
Digest the lava.
Quite yet. Yes. Watch out.
Let it burn.
All right. So, my number one. I guess I'll go the Mason route. My number three is Bounden. I love Bounden. I think that the story that it's able to tell is just hilarious. And the music is so great. I love that song, Bounding Rebound. It's one of those ones that gets stuck in your head. And when you think of the title of this, you just smile. And so for that reason, it's my number three. Number two is Day and Night. And a lot of people don't really put this in their favorites, but the reason I love it is because this was during this time it came out, when we weren't quite sure what the future of 2D animation was. And, you know, for a while there was a period that it was like this, lost art of something that from a bygone age. And so anything we got that was somewhat 2D animated, I really gravitated to. And so just the time period that this came out, I have a lot of personal feelings and excitement about 2D animation. I just love the way that it's able to combine 2D and CGI so well. The story isn't anything revolutionary per se. It's just kind of, it's more gimmicky than anything, but I love it for that reason. And then number one, Jerry's Game. I think Jerry's Game is the epitome of all Pixar shorts. Jerry is such a great character. I mean, they should just get rid of the lamp and make Jerry their mascot. He's great.
Chumps on the...
Mason, you need to do a Pixar parody.
Please do.
With all your animation skills and make that happen.
Oh, I need a Jerry's Game rig off of the internet.
You're going to get a million likes.
Yes, you are.
Thumbs up on YouTube. Man. I'm telling you, do it.
It's all for the likes, man.
So what makes Pixar shorts so great, in your opinion? Or are they even great? I'm just assuming.
Well, they're, I mean, aren't they just the top standard of I mean, animated short films? I remember watching the Academy Award nominated animated short films and live action in Salt Lake a couple years ago. That was the one when Lava was nominated. And
no, Luna, La Luna.
Oh, Lava, La Luna. There's a lot of Luna.
And Secret Access,
right?
Oh, I wish. No, but this one was La Luna, and I still enjoyed it. But that was the one that really, really stood out. I can't really remember any of the other ones. There was one that I think came from a university. There was, oh yeah, that one was the one with Fantastic Flying Books of Mr. Mm-hmm. Morris Lesmore.
And then
that one was okay, but just Pixar just excels by how simple yet self-contained their stories are when they do short films. Like, they pack so much into such a short amount of time. As an animation student, you know, I've done a couple of them, and it's harder to do a short film than it is to do a feature length film. Not that I've been involved in any feature length films, but the shorter time span you have, the bigger challenge you have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine if you had to produce a 30 second animated short like we did in our program last semester. Like, you can't waste anything. You have to get to the point, but also take your time and make the pacing perfect, but don't bore the audience, you know, but don't lose the punchline, but, you know, and so, you really have to hand it to Pixar. Not that other studios don't do short films very well. It's just that Pixar stands out. Most of the time, or a lot of the time, they'll show off their new tech in their short films, and that's always a big deal. Yeah, that's really all I have to say about it. Pixar just rocks at short films.
You know, and it's kind of unfair almost because every year Pixar has a contender for the Oscar and they just have so much, you know, horsepower and just people and money behind them that's able to make these amazing shorts. And so I always kind of feel bad for the other animators and studios or even colleges that are up against them because you really have to stand out and be above and beyond great to beat Pixar most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, because Pixar is the best of the best. They hire the best story talent. They hire the best artistry and animation talent. So, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. We all really enjoy the output, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, on to the main event, everyone. Inside Out, the moment you've all been waiting for.
We have been waiting for a long time. It's been two years.
When did we first talk about this?
Oh, well,
I remember.
Well, initially back in our Swan Princess episode, which was in 2012, Mason did not talk about it. But Kelsey and I initially talked about this way back when, you know, that was 2012. This concept has been in the mind of Pete Docter since around 2009, really actively starting to develop this film. But do you remember forever? We knew this film as the untitled Pixar movie that takes you inside the mind. Like, talk
yeah,
about
exactly.
Tongue Twister. Not really just a mouthful.
Yeah, that's a clear deviation from Pixar's, you know, four syllable maximum for the titles of their movies.
Yeah, but what I was saying is it's been 2 years since we've had a Pixar film for a while, or basically since, I believe, since Cars. Don't quote me on that. let me just double check.
Oh,
this.
Here come the fact police.
It's still Pixar.
Well, brave.
While we're on the subject of fact police, I meant that as a joke. I know that The Incredibles is five syllables.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I was right. So basically, every year since Cars was released, we have gotten a Pixar film in theater. So it kind of became, since 2006, we've had a Pixar film every single year. And mm-hmm. then it ended with Monsters University because The Good Dinosaur got pushed. So it was supposed to be released last year and Maleficent took its place. And so that was kind of shaky because we didn't get our Pixar fix. But never fear, everybody. The wait was worth it because Inside Out is really stellar.
That, and we're getting another Pixar film by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Woo!
They're making up for it. The fact that we didn't get one last year. So, of course, this is Pete Docter, co-directed by Ronaldo Del Carmen, or I guess you'd call them co-directors.
Mm-hmm. Just some interesting, you know, tidbits about this. This is actually the first Pixar film not to have Steve Jobs' involvement. As you know, he was owner of the company for a while and eventually sold it to Disney, but he was always very involved, as he was with most everything in his life and work career. But this was the first film that didn't have his touch at all. He died in 2011, and I don't think this was really fleshed out too much at this point for him to have been involved when he did die. Same is true with John Lasseter. For the most part, John Lasseter didn't have the typical input that he had previously, because around this time that this film was being developed, he started taking over for Walt Disney Animation Studios and started restructuring that and making sure, you know, that studio was back on track. So very impressive that normally these figureheads that helped lead and guide films, at least Pixar films over the years, those were gone. And yet still it was such a fantastic film. And that's just a testament to Pete Docter and how great of a director he is and a storyteller.
Yeah. Definitely give Pete Docter credit. But as Ed Catmull said, you have to trust the system, and the Pixar system is very, very conducive to brilliant ideas and brilliant work, you know, and great talent and hard work to really achieve these films. And so now we know that you don't necessarily need the touch of John Lasseter for your Pixar film to be successful. One of my friends, Jeff, who's in grad school with me, he made the comment that Pixar is back. I guess maybe it was the time gap he was referring to, but I really didn't think that Monsters U was all that bad. But maybe there was a period of time when maybe we didn't feel like there was a Pixar film out currently that really gave us, you know, an emotional impact or you know, was really powerful, you know, something mm-hmm. like Up or Finding Nemo. And I've heard a lot of people compare this one to Up.
Well, yeah. Both of them were Pete Docter.
Oh, well.
And I feel like Pete Docter has that, like, he's just always trying to get into that spot where it just, like, everybody's a little bit bruised in their heart somewhere. And he's just the type that, like, wants to go in and like, push it. Like, push that little bruise and make it hurt a little bit more.
Yep. As Matthew McConaughey said, that's the sweet spot.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So this film has done extraordinary well in just the short amount of time that it's been released. It came out on June 19th, 2015 in the U.S., and it had an amazing opening weekend that was overshadowed by another, you know, film that is taking over the box office, Jurassic World. It placed number two that weekend to Jurassic World just by a little bit. And its opening numbers were $91 million, which is huge. Not only it's huge for a Pixar film, it's the second largest opening weekend for a Pixar film other than Toy Story 3, but just in general, it is the highest grossing original concept film, meaning a film that wasn't derived from a sequel or an adapted work such as a book. So very, very cool. It totally blew the previous record holder out of the water, which was Avatar at 77 million. So beat it by, you know, 14 million. And still, you know, it was just such a shame that it wasn't able to overtake Jurassic World. And even last weekend, I thought, okay, Jurassic World is definitely going to go down, and it didn't. Jurassic World inched them out just by, $3 or $4 million. It ended up doing, Inside Out ended up doing around 50-ish million. And as of today, it's done $185 million domestically and $266 million worldwide. And it hasn't even been out, you know, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So incredible. I can't wait to see where this falls when its entire theater run is done. It's going to be up there.
It's exciting. It's a victory for original content.
You know, it's so funny. Because, you know, just a month before, we had Tomorrowland, which was Brad Bird, another Pixarian who, you know, everyone knew it was going to do amazingly well, and it just didn't. And then, you know, there came this announcement from Disney that they were going to scrap all these, you know, new concepts and just move to, you know, remakes and whatnot. And then we have this, and I'm wondering if now Disney is kind of scratching their head, like, they don't know what to do anymore. I hope this gives them some faith in other ideas out there that are original, animated or not, because we need more of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well said.
Look at this movie and how it's like challenged how we think about the mind and growing up. Like, this brought completely new ideas to the forefront of discussion. Like, people have been talking about Inside Out nonstop for the past few weeks, just because it was able to bring us something we hadn't seen before. And that was exciting. It wasn't just, oh yeah, there was a new, Avengers movie and a new character was introduced. Yay. I mean, the level of discussion on this film is just so much different than anything previous.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, today I was at work and I had some of my other coworkers come in, and my one coworker, she said, "Chelsea, I had to tell you this because I saw Inside Out and I want to know what you think." And my other coworker was like, "I saw it too. I want to talk about it too." And all three of us, we were just like really wanting to talk to it, which, I'll be honest, that doesn't always happen with the coming out of every animated film. Not everybody is like, oh, I mean, yes, I've been dubbed the animation girl, at work, but
most people don't even see them.
Yeah.
So there's
exactly.
No discussion to be had.
Exactly. But now everybody not only wants to say that they saw it, but wants to have a discussion on it and wants to have this like back and forth, which is really cool.
Yeah, even a lot of times with adults that, you know, I interact with who see animated films, they see it because of their kids and they usually say, "Oh, it was cute." And then the discussion goes nowhere. So to hear that these discussions are happening, you know, online and in person with friends and acquaintances and coworkers, it's just really cool.
Well, let's talk about these ideas. So, for the uninitiated, Pixar hashes out and conceives and works out its original ideas in what's called the Brain Trust, and that's a tight-knit and very, you know, trusted group of mostly directors, but it can vary. Usually John Lasseter is there. Well, usually Catmull's there. Just think of it as an extremely intense brainstorming session by a bunch of creative geniuses. I mean, can you even imagine? And, you know, Ed Catmull wrote his book, Creativity Incorporated, which is a terrific book on management for one, but also just an inside look on how Pixar is managed. And this led me to the conclusion that Pixar is one of the best managed animation studios out there. And he has an entire sequence that's dedicated to taking us inside, almost a shot-for-shot recounting of a brain trust meeting where Inside Out was first pitched by Pete Docter. And so it's like 3.5 pages, really good stuff. And so if you will permit me a dramatic reading, maybe not that dramatic.
Yes.
But we'd love to just read this part, because not only does it talk about, you know, the earliest proto ideas of Inside Out, it goes into the brain trust meeting and all the awesome creative input that goes into launching titles like this. So this is what Ed Catmull says. "To get a clear sense of how candor is delivered at Pixar, I want to take you inside a brain trust meeting. This one followed an early screening of a Pete Docter film, then known as the untitled Pixar movie that takes you inside the mind. The premise for the film had emerged straight out of Pete's cranium, and it was predictably ambitious, layered, and complex. Already, Pete and his team had spent months hashing out those whose mind exactly he was going to take viewers inside of, and what those viewers would ultimately find when they got there. As brain trusts go, this was a crowded one with about 20 people at the table and 15 more in chairs against the walls. Everyone grabbed plates of foods on the way in, and after a small talk, we got down to business. Earlier, before the screening, Pete had described what they'd come up with so far in terms of the overall conceit of the film and the specific story points that he hoped would connect with the audience. 'What's inside the mind?' he asked his colleagues. 'Your emotions. And we've worked really hard to make these characters look the way those emotions feel. We have our main character, an emotion called joy, who is effervescent. She literally glows when she's excited. Then we have fear. He thinks of himself as confident and suave, but he's a little raw nerve and tends to freak out. The other characters are anger and sadness. Her shape is inspired by teardrops, and disgust, who basically turns up her nose at everything. And all these guys work at what we call headquarters." And that got a laugh, as did many scenes in the roughed out 10-minute preview that followed, which everyone agreed had the potential to be, like Pete's previous film, Up, among our most original and affecting. As I've said, Pete is superb at teasing out subtle moments that are both funny and emotionally authentic. And this idea of bringing a person's competing emotions to life was inspired, rich with possibility. But as The Brain Trust came to life, there seemed to be a consensus that one of the movie's major scenes, an argument between two characters about why certain memories fade while others burn bright forever, was too minor to sufficiently connect audiences to the profound ideas the film was attempting to tackle. Pete is a big guy, 6 foot, 4.5, but despite his size, he projects an undaunted gentleness. This was in evidence in the conference room now as he listened to us parse what was amiss in this pivotal scene. His face was open, not pained. He'd been through this many times before, and he believed in its power to help him get where he was trying to go. Midway down the table, Brad Bird shifted in his chair. Dun, dun, dun! You know that when Brad Bird shifts in his chair, something's up. Brad joined Pixar in 2000 after having written and directed The Iron Giant at Warner Brothers, and his first movie for us was Los Increíbles, which opened in 2004. You know, The Incredibles. Brad is a born rebel who fights against creative conformity in any guise. I love it. The smell of artistic victory is his drug, and with his rapid, high-energy delivery, he will turn almost everything into a battle to win for the cause of creativity, even if there isn't anybody around to fight. So it was no surprise that he was among the first to articulate his worries about the core of the story feeling too slight. I understand that you want to keep this simple and relatable, he told Pete, but I think we need something that your audience can get a little more invested in. Andrew Stanton spoke next. Andrew is fond of saying that people need to be wrong as fast as they can. I love that philosophy. In a battle, if you're faced with two hills and you're unsure which one to attack, he says the right course of action is to hurry up and choose. If you find out it's the wrong hill, turn around and attack the other one. In that scenario, the only unacceptable course of action is running between the hills. Now he seems to be suggesting that Pete and his team had stormed the wrong hill. I think you need to spend more time settling on the rules of your imagined world, he said. Every Pixar movie has its own rules that viewers have to accept, understand, and enjoy understanding. The voices of the toys in the Toy Story films, for example, are never audible to humans. The rats in Ratatouille walk on four paws, like normal vermin, except for Remy, our star, whose upright posture sets him apart. In Pete's film, one of the rules, at least at this point, was that memories, depicted as glowing glass globes, were stored in the brain by traveling through a maze of chutes into a kind of archive. When retrieved or remembered, they'd roll back down another tangle of chutes, like bowling balls being returned to bowlers at the alley. Oh yeah, I like that imagery. That particular construct was elegant and effective, but Andrew suggested that another rule needed to be firmed up and clarified: how memories and emotions change over time as the brain gets older. This was the moment in the film, Andrew said, to establish some key themes. Listening to this, I remembered how in Toy Story 2, the addition of Wheezy immediately helped establish the idea that damaged toys could be discarded, left to sit, unloved, on the shelf. Andrew felt there was a similarly impactful opportunity here that was being missed, and thus was keeping the film from working. And he said so candidly. Pete, this movie is about the inevitability of change, he said, and of growing up. This set Brad off. Oh my gosh, you never want to set Brad Bird off. A lot of us in this room have not grown up, and I mean that in the best way, he said. The conundrum is how to become mature, how to take on responsibility and become reliable, while at the same time preserving your childlike wonder. People have come up to me many times, as I'm sure has happened to many people in this room, and said, gee, I wish I could be creative like you. That would be something to be able to draw. But I believe that everyone begins with the ability to draw. Kids are instinctively there. But a lot of them unlearn it, or people tell them they can't, or it's impractical. So yes, kids have to grow up, but maybe there's a way to suggest that they could be better off if they held onto some of their childish ideas. Pete, the thing I want to give you a big round of applause for is this. This is a freaking big idea to try to make a movie about. Brad continued, his voice full of affection. I said to you on previous films, you're trying to do a triple backflip into a gale force wind, and you're mad at yourself for not sticking the landing. Like, it's amazing you're alive. What you're doing with this film is the same, and it's the kind of thing that nobody else in the movie industry is doing with a sizable budget. Boy, isn't that the truth. So, huge round of applause. Brad paused as everybody clapped. Then he grinned at Pete, who grinned back, and you're in for a world of hurt, Brad said. This is such a great look into the mind of Brad Bird.
I know, right?
A character study, if you will. Almost done, folks. An important corollary to the assertion that the Brain Trust must be candid is that filmmakers must be ready to hear the truth. Candor is only valuable if the people on the receiving end is open to it and willing, if necessary, to let go of things that don't work. Jonas Rivera, the producer of Pete's film, tries to make the painful process easier by doing something he calls headlining the main points of a Brain Trust session for whichever director he's assisting, distilling the many observations down to a digestible takeaway. Once this brain trust meeting wrapped up, this is exactly what he did for Pete, ticking off the areas that seemed the most problematic, reminding him of the scenes that resonated most. So what did we blow up, Jonas asks, and what did we go backwards on, and what do you love? Is what you loved about the film different now than it was when we started? The way the movie opens, Pete responded, I love. Jonas raised his hand in a salute. Okay, that's the movie then, he said. How we set up the story has to handshake with that. I agree, Pete said. They were on their way.
Awesome.
So, excellent book. You really have to check it out if you're a Pixar fan.
I'm going to say, if you are in any business ever trying to lead people in anything, you need to look at this book. But that's just me.
Continue. You can find it on rotoscopers.com/Amazon or rotoscopers.com/Audible if you want to listen to it.
Really? Awesome. Yeah. Thanks.
I mean, it's
the audiobook version.
Me too.
Yeah. And I know the audiobook version isn't as awesome as yours truly narrating it or reading
it. It's not.
But it is still a free trial and it's awesome. Check it out. I mean, what more needs to be said? These brain trust sessions are amazing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just think of... You know, that was just one session and how much they were able to get out of that and how, like, without guile they were and candid they were. And just they are there because they want is what is best for the story, not necessarily what the director has invested in it, whatnot. They want what's best for the story and ultimately the movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's talk about big ideas. And more important, well, actually, this one specifically is a big question. Do you all think that Inside Out is for kids? And I'll preface that with a comment. I saw in a few reviews apparently that were from parents who were disappointed with the film that it wasn't as entertaining for kids as it should have been. What do y'all think?
That is a shame that parents are disappointed that they take their kids to a movie and they expect the filmmakers to pander to the lowest common denominator, which is the children. Not the fact that
children are the lowest common denominator.
Well, just, you know, they pandered, you know, and that's what they expect. Like, it's going to be funny. It's going to have gags. My kids are going to love it. They're going to stay entertained the whole time. But this movie is so much more than that. They should want more films like this for their kids because it gets their kids to think and to understand and to process the world around them or inside them in a way that, you know, maybe not 100% scientifically true. We don't have actual little things in our head that that's not how it works. But the way that it's able to depict and tell these themes translates to children to help them better understand and live in the world that they live in.
Yeah, I agree with Morgan. I do not think that this film deserves to be a kid's movie. And parents should be forewarned that they might have a hard time keeping their children entertained and laughing constantly, whatever they want, desired outcome that they're looking for, during Inside Out. There's some action comedy, but it's not slapstick. You know?
I mean, how old are their kids? My niece and nephew went to it, and they were 10 and 7, and they loved the film.
I will admit that I did not hear very many laughs. There's this one kid who was really annoying. He was like 6 or something, and he would just laugh with this like shrieky laugh every time that Brazilian helicopter pilot would show up.
Come with me, Gatinha.
He sounds like an outlier.
Not a lot of fart jokes, no gibberish-speaking yellow minions running around naked in this film. Not that the minions are terrible, but you just can't compare.
Right.
And so I wish there was a system to warn parents, like, hey, this isn't a kid's film necessarily.
But also, it should be something to kind of tell that to the older kids, too. You know, because older kids, my nephew, he's 14 now, and he was like, I don't really want to go see it, blah, blah, blah. And then my sister...
Typical 14-year-old.
Right, and my sister was like, you know, should he go see it? Would he like it? And I'm like, yeah, I think he would like it more than the other kids, just because he's at an age where he can appreciate this type of stuff. And, you know, I feel like most of Pixar movies, they kind of have this way of... They kind of go to that, as I was saying before, that poignant part of childhood or that part of the heart where you just start remembering that navigating between kiddom and, you know, adulthood is like messy and painful. And Inside Out is different from the rest of them because it essentially makes that its own plot. Like, mm-hmm. That is its plot. And a lot of younger kids aren't really going to be as into it, and we'll even see in some of the In one of the voicemails we got, too, they kept saying that it was really dark. It was very depressing or something. I've gotten that a few times, too, talking to different people. It's like, it was super sad. And it's like, sadness. I don't like this sadness thing. You know, at least at the beginning, that's what
most people
are saying.
That's exactly what the film wants them to think.
I know. But, you know, it's like, for those kids who are like 6, 7, and 8, when you still have this belief that, you know, I'm a kid, therefore, you know, all I really want is joy. Sadness is no fun, so keep that away. You know, it's, you're not going to be able to really appreciate, you know, the depth of it.
Yeah, depth, complexity, you know, hard lessons to learn. And these aren't necessarily what's on the forefront of like 5 and 6 year olds' kids' minds. You know, mostly they just want to laugh and be entertained and see the pretty princesses. And although I guess it's evident that younger children were entertained by this film, I think that the entertainment value was for all audiences because this movie brought animation into an art form.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be appreciated.
This is a conundrum or just an issue that marketers for animated films have is, do we take a risk where we only do the marketing towards the adults and hope that they go see it and also take their kids? Or do we, you know, we advertise to the children and hope that the parents will obviously like it as well? It's very interesting. And the characters in this film, they were exaggerated. They were super cartoony. And I think just all the bright colors. And I think that gave the impression that this was a kid's film, quote unquote, when it wasn't. It was so much more than a kid's film.
You got to hand it to Pixar. They, you know, they have such a hardcore emphasis on research and then spending considerable time, you know, quote unquote, getting it right and really making sure that the idea is cultivated in a great creative environment. I will admit some of the things were hard for me to swallow. Like all of the rules, like, oh, this is abstract thought. And, you know, and this is dreams. And this is her subconscious. This is where all her worst fears are and, all, you know, all that stuff. So some of that was hard for me to grasp. But the fact that they spent so much time really pounding that in and kind of chiseling out those rules, it made the film believable.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I kind of saw the rules like a little kid. Okay, I'll be honest. I kind of saw all the rules in the exposition as though my 7-year-old self was writing the story. Because they just kind of, it just... The way they laid it all out was so relatable to like that 7-year-old who's just kind of off in their own little world and creating this whole story as they go. And it makes no sense. Like, it makes sense, but at the same time, you like, as an adult, you look at it and you're like, wow, where is that coming from? You know? So I kind of saw this as just kind of how he did it was so childlike. And I think that's one of the reasons why it worked, because you could kind of believe that a kid would be thinking of the things that are most important in my life, you know, that I would use to describe me. I'm going to make there'll be islands over here.
Yeah,
and be
yeah.
connected to this, you know. So I really appreciated that and how they did the exposition.
Yeah, yeah. The rules are spelt out in a very simple and clear way so that they're easy to understand. And that's definitely a talent that Pixar has.
Mm-hmm.
Coen brothers are also really good at that. They have a lot of films where the exposition just spells out everything in film universe, and it's easy to understand. Okay, so Riley herself, I think she's really cool. She's one of my favorite Pixar characters just because of how human they made her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? For one, Pixar's come a long way since like the plasticky look of Andy mom and everybody from the Toy Story days.
I should hope so, yeah. Like 20 years later.
Yeah, we really hope so. You know, I think if there was a film that character looks and styles would fit the most in, it'd probably be Toy Story. Like, they don't quite fit into The Incredibles, like, as far as, like, shape and design. Definitely not Up. Maybe Ratatouille, but probably not. So this is probably closer to Toy Story. And so, who knows? Might be a little crossover there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I like about her is that she's she could represent any child. You know, they figured out a good neutral design for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved Riley's design. Like, she was so plain. That's just the best that I could use to describe her. And it perfectly typifies being an awkward preteen. I mean, we were all there and we all looked like that. Nothing glamorous about her design whatsoever. And it was so real because they did that. And I was actually looking through the art book and I was looking at other concept designs that they had for Riley, and certain ones, she was much cuter, and she, you know, had the curly hair and the dimples and the big smile, and she was adorable. So much more visually appealing. You see that and you kind of light up and you're attracted to that. However, I'm so glad that they went in a completely different direction with her design, because it shows that she's, you know, not everything has to be, you know, totally gorgeous and pretty. She's just normal. And the story was just about someone who was normal. And I think that because, you know, she was kind of ambiguous in her design, she not necessarily super girly, not necessarily super, you know, boyish, that she appealed to both genders, which is really important. And never mind.
Absolutely. In animation, I mean, one of the biggest principles is character appeal. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the character looks good. It just means that they are relatable. And Riley is just that. And yeah, you mentioned something about, like, the, you know, her being plain. You know, the world outside of her mind is very bleak and dismal at times. And it's reality, you know. And so I like that the movie went there. And whenever you make a film or any creative endeavor, you got to worry about scope. And I know at when it was originally pitched, there was several more emotions planned in the conceptualization of the film. Again, you got to think about scope and really, you know, whittling it down.
As I was watching this movie, I was thinking, okay, why five emotions? Are there not? I mean, clearly we have so many more emotions in our minds and in our brain that happen, but they specifically went with five emotions because they went off a famous professor from Berkeley. And he has identified six core emotions: anger, fear, sadness, disgust, joy, and surprise. So they actually found that surprise and fear were very similar. And so they decided to cut it for simplicity. And I think that was the perfect way to go, because having five characters is manageable. But then once you get six, there's just a lot happening. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a lot happening in the brain. There's probably thousands of emotions that happen. But for this story, to simplify the ever, you know, expansive world of the mind, five is just enough. So bye-bye, surprise.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so we start the movie with joy. Let's just do a quick discussion on all the emotions. Joy, Amy Poehler. I liked her, but I got Amy Poehler overload after a while. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, see, I didn't really associate that. I didn't associate her voice actress with the character. I know Amy Poehler, and I've seen her SNL and lots of things that she's done, and I love her. But for some reason, I personally was able to separate the two, which was good. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was invested in the story or just not thinking too much about the voice actress. But I definitely could see how that was possible and happened, because she was the main character other than Riley and Sadness.
And speaking of Sadness, I think she was like the runaway star of this film, along with Bing Bong.
Absolutely.
She's the most interesting character for me, because we talked about in the Brain Trust, there are rules that had to be established. Well, she's the character that can break the rules that we thought we knew at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then she reveals this awesome lesson about the relationship between joy and sadness, and also that, you know, the big reveal that memories can be both joyful and sad. It doesn't have to be necessarily one or the other, and both can be good. You know, that her scene with Bing Bong, when Joy tries her fierce optimism, you know, to get him to dust himself off and keep going, but it just doesn't work. And then Sadness sits down and says, you know, it's really sad and it's horrible, but I bet at the time it was, you know, y'all had a lot of great memories and blah, 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 blah. And that made Bing Bong feel better. And so it goes into the different methods of coping with life. And Sadness is such a huge part of that. Phyllis Smith is amazing. I love her. I loved her on The Office. And then she was, you know, in several other movies where she basically plays the same character. But seeing her in a, seeing her voice be a little more dynamic, you know, and have a little more range for an animated film was really, really cool. Some people said they didn't like her, or that she stood out too much. But I thought she was just perfect for this design and for this role.
I thought it was great. As you were reading the pages from Creativity Inc., it made me realize, how Andrew Stanton was the one that, you know, the moment that sadness tries to touch everything and everything starts turning sad, how those, it's like, I like how he was the one that said, I think you should focus on how memories can change over the years. How even though it goes from, you know, everything's happy to now because add something other, one other element in there, it is now sad. And how all of these things, like, I was like, whoa, that's so cool. And just how sadness, at first, everyone was just like, hey, get in your corner, stay there, don't touch anything. But really, that is what Riley needed in order to cope and in order to move past this hurdle of life changes.
Yeah. Okay, so there's fear, voiced by Bill Hader. I like how they explain that some of these emotions that seem negative are actually beneficial, because fear helps you not get yourself killed, you know, or not get into situations that would get you killed. Yep. And so I appreciated that. You know, fear was kind of a surprise hit for me. I liked his character, even though I'm not a Bill Hader fan. I'm a Bill Hader hater.
Yeah, totally hater.
I actually didn't like fear that much. Fear was, out of the five, the one who blended in the background the most. I don't know if that's because I personally don't have a lot of fear in my life, but I'm not afraid of your typical spiders, snakes, bugs, or scary movies don't really bug me. But I just didn't really connect with him as much as I did disgust, or I guess anger. Yeah, if I were to rate the emotions, it would be joy, sadness, disgust, anger, fear.
Hmm. All right. And then disgust. Oh, my gosh. Like, if you're listening, Mindy Kaling, I love you.
She was the best.
If you're out there somewhere, I think you're awesome.
We didn't get enough of her.
I really
didn't. It's true.
Hey, do you think it was true that her final design was meant to resemble broccoli? Because, you know, they made such a big deal about broccoli in the film.
Well, you know, I wouldn't quite know, because the art book has no commentary for the most part. It is
just kidding.
It's just images. It's
I hate it when art books do
tons and tons and tons of art, which it's an art book. It's the art of Inside Out, as it should. But we've become so accustomed to art books being more like making of books.
Yeah, annotative.
So there was very little text for the most part. They wanted the art to speak for themselves. And while that was good because we got jam-packed with a lot of art, I still felt that I wasn't able to learn about the process. Like, that is something, if that really were true, that she was designed after broccoli, that really I would have learned from the text of the book and just being able to, you know, read a little bit about the development of the character. Instead, I kind of had to infer. And so I guess that's just what the bonus features of the Blu-ray are for. They're making us buy both, which I'm not complaining.
Okay, and then anger, Lewis Black, I don't know him very well, but he does a very good job of of doing this emotion. I love his little gimmick when he just has an overload of anger, and he just has a tantrum, and fire spouts out of his head, you know, and he's like, ah! Oh, man, I love it. I love how you can see Riley react to when each emotion takes control.
Mm-hmm. Since we're not really going scene by scene, it's more philosophical, this discussion. You know, this had me thinking, and I'm sure they did this on purpose. In this film and in life, do the emotions control us, or do we control the emotions?
There didn't seem to be a lot of controlling of the emotions by
that. Yeah. But that's because you're young, and typically you're driven by your emotions, and you let them control you, and you just react. As you get older, you're able to be more in control of when, you know, a scary situation happens, or control your anger or your joy. And I think as you mature, you have a bigger grasp on that. But then at the same time, in the film, I did feel that it tried to make it seem like the emotions were controlling her, but it's even more than that. I think the emotions are her. So it's not like they were controlling her. They just are her. They exist. So when the emotion does something, that's Riley doing something. That's not one controlling the other. It's just simultaneous action.
Oh, I think you also can take into consideration how when the mom came in and she said, oh, I just want to thank you for always just being that happy girl, and you're just doing great. Can we just keep smiling during this time? And well, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing or a diss on the mom for doing that, but you can also see where Riley takes, like, all of, from that moment on, all of the emotions were like, happy girl, happy. Let's get that in order, but they can't take it. So, like, they're trying to, like, have one emotion in charge, but I think in life you kind of have to be aware of all of your emotions and not necessarily control them, but be aware of them. Cause you can't, like, there's one part where sadness almost falls into the pit. Like, she almost falls off the cliff. And in my head, I'm thinking, are you able to lose sadness? Like, kill sadness? Because that, as I was like, is this going to be part of the rules? I don't know.
Yeah, they got pills for that.
Exactly. But then it's like, yeah, there are definitely people that, you know, they, because of some traumatic experience, they go numb. And then they end up, in order to stop feeling that pain, they shift over to either anger or to the joy side, where they just kind of stay away from sadness, but then they're not able to cope with things because they're not giving sadness its day to kind of just work its magic of helping you heal and helping you kind of move forward and get over things.
Yeah, well, I think that's maybe one of the main conflicts of that joy the character has in the film, is that she feels the need to dominate what's going on in the mind. And the other emotions seem to understand that, you know, joy is, she's a very powerful emotion. She's been there the longest, and it's important that Riley is happy. And they understand that. But at the same time, Joy still has to kind of learn the lesson, you know, like you said, Chelsea, that some other emotions need to take their course and work themselves out in absence of joy. Mm-hmm. And that's another hard lesson to learn, and it addresses it very well. Did y'all like the personality islands? I thought those were kind of cool. You didn't see enough of them, though. They just kept falling.
Oh, that was a sad moment. And but at the same time, as that was happening, you sort of were internalizing, at least I was. I was thinking about myself or other people I know and just thinking, yeah, that happens. There are parts of you that go away and they change. And particularly Goofball Island was,
Never went away for me.
That is true. But for her, that was something that we were introduced to at the very beginning. She was just this goofy little girl and she was so fun and her parents loved that. It was one of the most key parts of her personality and it just crumbled and you didn't know if it was going to be rebuilt. And turns out that it didn't. Yeah. But that's what happens in life, is that we evolve and things change. And especially when you're going from, you know, you're in your adolescent years, you're going from childhood to teenage years. There's a switch that goes off in a lot of kids where, you know, they put away childish things, whether consciously or unconsciously, and they just move on. Yeah. And some parts of that go. People get a lot more serious. People maybe on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Well, also, this was something that I found very interesting. We've all talked about different, like, personality books that they have out there. So you got the Myers-Briggs. I've also read one called The Color Code. And The Color Code was really interesting because, yeah, there's every person kind of goes by their color based on their main emotion that kind of takes over. Yellow being the effervescent, the excited, the everything's gonna be happy, fun. You've got the red, who is the more domineering, dominant type personality. And then you also have the white that's more of loving and, you know, trying to just meshes over everything, gets along with everybody. And then there's blue that is the more of the thoughtful, sad, not so much sad, but the
in touch with emotions, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit feelings. More in touch with the emotions and more empathetic, I guess you could say, which I thought was really cool that you could kind of see that in the parents too, when you looked inside their minds and which of the main characters was in charge of their mind. Like the mom was blue, the dad was red, you know, those types of personalities that just kind of stand out.
Yeah. What's interesting, cool. When you go into the parents' minds, it didn't seem like the mom's, the one that looked like sadness, she didn't seem very sad, but she seemed like the leader.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the red one should be angry, but he didn't seem very angry, and neither did anyone else. There was, you know, the foot is down, sir, the foot is down. He didn't seem very scared. And so I guess there are different interpretations for each person, but boy, that's a whole different discussion, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so before we talk about a character who actually did disappear forever and we were supposed to be okay with it, can we just talk about the gum commercial jingle? Triple Den. I love how they did random memories popping back, random things popping back in your head. Oh, we just send this annoying thing up to headquarters sometimes. Hey, let's do it now. It's like your brain's just messing with you. Love it.
You know, interesting fact about that, the voice of the Triple Dent Gum commercial was actually a Pixar animator named, well, he works in for Pixar, Nick Patera. And he is a YouTuber who's done a ton of Disney covers, and he's really, really awesome. And so this was actually his debut. He announced it on his on Twitter and on Instagram that this is, you know, what he was able to do. And I'm wondering if, you know, he was just doing a scratch voice for it. And then
yeah, that'd be cool
it.
If it was a ringtone or something.
Oh,
the cat's meow apart
yes.
for Pixar fans.
Oh, I want that now. You know, I loved, you mentioned it was just so clever because that happens. There were so many things about the mind and memory that they were able to conceptualize in a hilarious way that just made you think, oh, that's great. You know, there are things like trains of thought or abstract thought or just random memories or jingles that pop into your head.
Trains are horrible reproductions of real life with horrible acting and stuff like that. I love
or
it.
When she's in the train of thought, she knocks over, you know, some cards and their facts and ideas. And someone says like, I can't tell the difference. It's like, eh, don't worry about it. Happens all the time.
Happens all the time. All right. All right. The time has come. We have to talk about Bing Bong.
Oh.
Bing Bong.
He really was the runaway character for this one. You know what? I thought he was going to be the villain. I'll just say it. And I know I'm not alone. Lotso ruined Pixar for me. I was waiting for Bing Bong to just turn on Joy and Sadness and try to kill him. Be like, I'm taking over her mind.
That would be quite good, but not as good as it ended up being. We've definitely been had been primed with the way that Disney and Pixar have been, you know, giving us their villains. It seems like, you know, we just had someone that there wasn't even a villain. That was a breath of fresh air. And I feel like the surprise villain is so overdone right now over the past 5 years. I was thinking to myself, the no villain, not having a villain, is the new surprise villain, which is the new explicit villain. So that is the trajectory of villains over the years. So actually not having a villain, I appreciated.
Yeah, this is more like man or woman versus self.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, Bing Bong was just super charming. I didn't necessarily, I don't know. I understood the logic behind his character design, but he was still kind of like weird looking to me. But anyway, really, really heartbreaking when he sacrificed himself.
Did you see that coming?
He fades away. No, except for that one, except once he said the line, sing louder, I was like,
yeah.
Oh no,
yep.
He's going to bail.
Yeah.
Bing Bong!
Did you cry?
No, I only teared up once in this film, and it wasn't during Bing Bong. But
oh,
I still, I was still, oof.
I teared up zero sad. Times during this film.
He
really?
Is sad. He's gone forever, man.
I cried right when she was, when Joy was crying. I cried a lot at that point. And then also when Bing Bong sacrificed himself, I did cry at that point.
There's the awesome scene where Joy is in the pit of forgottenness and she's remembering all the things. And instead of being joyful about it, she's sad.
Mm-hmm. Because they're disappearing. Like all these moments that, you know, kind of were her creation. These were her, most of them are joyful moments that they're just kind of going away. Like, do you remember the way that she used to hold her tongue the way she would draw and all these little things? I mean, it's like a parent watching their kid kind of grow up and realizing it's not there anymore, or even yourself looking and thinking, wow, I'm not that kid anymore. Like there's just a very big difference now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was really sad. And the one part that I teared up was when she's back with her parents and, aww. And they're having their family hug
it
and
out.
I was like, aw. Oh, except when Bing Bong says, take her to the moon for me.
Oh. Oh, my gosh.
You know that Pixar fans everywhere are going to demand that there's an Easter egg further on in a Pixar film where, like, you know,
Riley's on the moon.
Astronaut Riley goes to the moon or something like that.
Yeah. Oh.
It's interesting because you look at, like, in Toy Story, you're looking at the forgotten thing and how they feel when the child grows up and moves out of that, and you feel really bad for what was left behind. But then this one, it kind of shows you why you have to leave it behind. You know, in order to really move on, to really progress, you do have to kind of move past those things. I thought it was just brilliant the way they pulled all these things together.
Yeah, I really respect and love how how Bing Bong does not come back. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I didn't like Bing Bong, it's just that it had to happen. This is a movie about growing up and letting go about some things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she had already moved on to a point where he was almost non-existent. And so he really made that ultimate sacrifice to completely cut the tie and be no longer a part of her life ever again. But
yeah, he was kind of a bum.
For her development, it was worth it. It had to happen. Yeah. What did you guys think about, you know, the plot line where, well, I guess it's not a plot line. It's a key part where, you know, she moves, there's this big event, you know, there's that moment in the school where she's crying, you know, she's just so emotional and this is really hard. And, you know, that's a horrible event. This is the one that triggers it all, is that it's her first core memory that is sadness. And then this kind of puts her in this pit of despair for a while where joy is not present in her life and she's having a hard time coping with it. She didn't quite go into a depression. It was the beginnings of what could have been. I remember reading that Pete Docter initially, she was going to have depression and actually go into that, but they thought it was too dark. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that they did this was just perfect because, it lets you realize that there are key events in your life that shape who you are and your personality and how you go from there on out. And that moment of moving and then crying in front of class was one of those moments that she could have gone one way and just, you know, gone dark and taken herself out of situations and not being present and then just, you know, getting lost in herself in a sad place. Or what ultimately happened at the end, she could have picked herself up out of it and regained her joyfulness and grown and gotten better. And I'm glad that's what happened.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. All right. So I liked a lot of the details. I liked a lot of the cool things that they invented, like Dream Studios, you know.
Mm-hmm. I liked how
I loved you in Sparkly Rainbow Unicorn 3 or whatever.
My friend says you're famous. I didn't. Right. What did you say?
And then Abstract Thought was so weird.
I loved but I liked it because it was something different that you didn't actually expect to happen. Like right when they said, "Oh, Abstract Thought," then you're like, "Oh, something's going to happen. It's going to be big."
Look, it's just over there.
I love how it went from, you know, realistic, you know, our vision of what we are seeing, and then so sort of a cubism, to then just flat line. Like every aspect of Abstract Thought lost dimension and became flatter and flatter and more simplified. Mm-hmm. That was just a really cool way to, you know, depict that. I've never tried to depict Abstract Thought, but now that's how I'm going to do it.
I just draw a blob, like a little amoeba. Here I am, Abstract Thought.
I feel like I live in Abstract Thought a lot. Like, even as a kid, I would always, like, deconstruct things and think, I think that's what this means, and that's what, this leads to that, and yeah, that's what this is. And, like, actually, I've realized over the years it's one of my coping mechanisms is to go into Abstract Thought of, like, try to define things, look on other ways of, you know, without actually getting into the, you know, emotional side, but just kind of like look at things from the outside.
Yep.
But can I want to throw in the clown.
Clown is great. Not scary, because I'm not afraid of clowns. But
not at all. One of my favorite parts is when they're in there, and he's like, he just really wanted the candy. And so he's like in the balloon cage. And then all you hear is the clown mumbling, who's the birthday girl? Who's the birthday girl?
Oh, guys, get ready. The International Society of Clowns are definitely going to protest this film because it portrayed clowns in a very negative light.
Oh, good. A clown protest. It's basically a circus, right? A circus, just a little less happy.
It's sort of like the circus in We're Back.
Yeah.
Remember the lepers?
It's a leper boat.
Also, I have to throw in Riley's imaginary boyfriend.
Oh.
Stole the show.
Amazing.
Amazing part.
I'll die for you, Riley.
I would die for Riley. It's like, I've never seen him before. I'm from Canada.
That's
I would
pretty good.
Die for you. And at the very end when they're all falling and like she's for Riley.
Oh yeah, that part was really cute.
Oh my gosh.
That was a great, great moment.
You know, after this, it all kind of comes together pretty well. Like Joy comes in, saves the day or thinks so, but she realizes that she's been pretty mean to Sadness this whole movie, you know, kicking her to the corner. But then she gives her the chance to really take over, and she does. And the ending is such a heartbreaking moment, but there's also joy because Riley did come back and she ended up not making a horrible decision that, you know, who knows what the outcome would have been. And her mind is repaired. The damage done to her mind isn't necessarily reverse. It's just better in the end.
It grows.
Yep. I wish we still had the days when they did the quote-unquote bloopers for the animated characters, but I do like the credit scenes where we get to see inside everyone's minds as they're interacting with Riley and how different or how similar we all are.
The teacher, the one is like hitting his head on the globe. It's like,
I like that one. And then the cat seems to be the fan favorite.
Yeah.
See, the problem with this movie... And discussing this movie, there's no problems with this movie, let me just tell you. But discussing this movie, there were so many funny moments, and we've only seen it, you know, once, maybe twice for some of us. And just, we can't talk about all of those funny, hilarious moments at once. Just, we need more time with this movie. I feel like we need to do another podcast on this movie so we can just geek out about all the jokes. Although we've done a fair job, I must say, but like, it seems like, I know Mason was saying earlier, like, no one was laughing in this movie. Like, I was laughing like crazy. I loved all the jokes in this film.
I didn't mean that no one was laughing. I just mean that, like, little kids weren't laughing.
Oh, yeah.
The adults certainly were. Like, we were really enjoying ourselves. Mm-hmm. All right, so, you know Pixar. They love their Easter eggs. They love their references. Here are some things to watch out for the next time you see Inside Out. And, you know, I caught a few of these. The majority still need to kind of be confirmed. I've taken them from a few various sources. This is just the buzz right now, so don't shoot the messengers if some of these turn out to not be true. All right. Apparently, I did not see this. Some of the memory orbs show scenes from other Pixar films like Carl and Ellie's wedding in Up.
What?
I did not see those, but...
Riley was there?
Oh, boy. Here comes the great, all-powerful, indisputable Pixar theory that binds the universe together. It was just an Easter egg for Easter's sake.
Yeah, Easter.
Like I said earlier, Up's characters have a way different style and design than Inside Out, so I don't know how seriously we should take that.
How could Riley have been there when they got married, like, nearly 50 years ago? Tell me. How?
Holy cow. I don't know. It's Cloud Atlas and she's reincarnated. All right. So there's also
the doors.
Oh boy. In Imagination Land, there's a board game called Find Me with a Cartoon Nemo printed on the box.
Ooh.
Yeah. I really liked when Riley's nightmare about her new house starts playing and they play music from the Haunted Mansion from the Disney park.
Yes. Yes.
I recognize that one. I recognize that.
Right away I was like, yes. Thank you, Easter eggs.
A Haunted Mansion fanboy like me is not going to miss something like that. let's see. Hidden Mickey on the control console with the buttons. That one's easy. I did not see this anywhere, but according to Pete Docter, the Pizza Planet truck appears at least 3 times in the film.
Mm,
all right.
I didn't see it
We
once.
Have to go back and see it.
Frame by frame. Go.
Oh, a frame by frame. Yeah, that'd be great. Apparently you can see Colette from Ratatouille on a magazine cover. Do y'all know who Figment the Dragon is?
Yes.
You know, from the Disney parks? Imagine you. He's in Imagination Land somewhere. I think he's printed on something or he's like a discarded plush toy or something like that. Of course, the Luxo Ball, I think I remember this one from one of Riley's flashbacks playing with Bing Bong.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently, for a split second, you can see the birds from For the Birds on a power line while Riley and her family are making the move to San Francisco. And then, of course, there are multiple A113 references.
Yes.
So you'll just have to spot those yourself, but it's not too hard to find them. I think it'd be harder to find the Pizza Planet truck in this one. So, yeah, next time you watch Inside Out, look for those and then, you know, nudge your fellow Pixar fan friend and be like, ooh, 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 I saw it.
I guess the big question of the night is this the best Pixar film ever?
don't even get me started on the fanatics among the Pixar fan culture, but after honestly evaluating this against other Pixar films, I walked out of the theater knowing I enjoyed the film, but I could remember other Pixar films that had a more powerful impact on me.
Absolutely.
And this is just Mason's opinion. This is just from the book of Mason. It did not top the feels of Toy Story 3. Sorry. It did not top the emotional roller coaster that was Finding Nemo, for better or worse. And it just didn't match the sweetness of Up for me. And when I say that, a lot of hardcore Pixar fans are like, oh, but those are old Pixar films. We're talking about the new. Do not think for a second that I think this is an inferior movie. There were just other Pixar films that were even better. And that just proves how consistently awesome Pixar is.
Yeah, so we put a poll on the website. We did an awesome series called The Pixar Rewind. And I'll include a link in the show notes so you can read it. And basically, every day leading up to Inside Out, we did movie in chronological order reviewing a Pixar film. So it started with Toy Story, then A Bug's Life. And the last day we did a poll and we said, what is your favorite Pixar film? And as of time of recording, Inside Out is leading the polls, which is crazy to me.
Hello.
But this film has totally resonated with a lot of people and everyone. A lot of people are saying this is the best. I love it. It's my favorite. Me personally, it's not my favorite. It's amazing. I was very, very happy and satisfied with the result and the storytelling. But I think of films like The Incredibles and Ratatouille and the entire Toy Story trilogy. And to me, those at this point in time still are my number ones. Like, I would rather watch those over Inside Out at this point in time. You know, also, I do need more time with this film before I can do a definitive ranking.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's up there for sure.
I'll agree and say it's not my favorite, but it is definitely up there.
Oh, well, let's rate it while we're at it.
Sure.
I'm going to give it 4.5 stars.
Ooh.
It made me think. It made me, you know, it got me in the emotions. The music, I really liked the music, even though it wasn't necessarily iconic. It was weaved in really well to a point where you were able to listen. Well, you didn't even really listen to it. It wasn't needed. It just moved you so that you could think of other things as well. So I thought it was very emotive and very good.
Very good, very good. I will go ahead and give it 4 stars. It was not a perfect animated film. It wasn't my favorite, but it's still a really good one. There's nothing wrong with being a 4-star film.
I am going to give it 4.5 stars. It wasn't quite up to a 5-star level for me, which is epic, most amazing ever sort of feeling. However, it did have a lot of elements that I enjoyed. I thought it was funny. I thought it had heart. It was experimental. It was imaginative. It was just all of those things. But at this point in time, it's my personal opinion. To me, it is a 4.5 star film, which is not too shabby, I must say.
Oh, more than not too shabby. I mean, there's... we're talking about why we didn't rate it as a perfect film, but at the same time, it's still super high. Like, it's a very successful, awesome film, and we really enjoyed it.
Let us see what you all thought in our voicemail section.
Hey, Rotoscopers, it's me, Katie. I'm here to give you my review of Inside Out. I promise this will be quick. I really liked it. It made me sad. I was watching with my friends and I'm just like, is this Pixar's way of depicting depression? Because this is extremely sad. Even though it had funny parts, like everything Anger said made me laugh, but it was still like when Riley was confessing with her parents made me sad. Every time a little yellow orb turned blue, I got sad. And I'm just like, stop making me cry, Pixar. It hurts. It hurts a lot. Also, some of my favorite parts, well, not my favorite parts, but some of the parts I really were memorable to me was one, Onyx Sea Island is Greek themed. I love Greece. It's like, I'm a hardcore mythology nerd. So when Odyssey Island went down, I'm like, no, not the Greek one. I liked the Greek themed island. Stop it. And it didn't come back. I didn't think I saw it come back. Also, question. So Riley's boyfriend machine, was it pumping out millions of Justin Biebers? Because it seemed like it was a lot of Justin Biebers. So some of my favorite quotes are probably, yeah, I already said everything Anger says, and when he was doing the train, doot, 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 doot. It was funny. I give this 4 stars. I would have gotten it more, except I felt like we were super detached from Riley. It was more about her emotions than Riley, which I get, but I wanted Riley a little bit more. Okay, since I promised this would be under 2 minutes, I'm going to make this quick. I am very confused. Last thing I sent in, I asked if you guys would do Equestria Girls. I didn't get an answer. I commented, and Mason was no help. So I really want to know, will you guys review Equestria Girls? Love your podcast. You are hilarious. Mason, I want an answer. Bye.
Okay. Yes. Katie, I think we've been doing this back and forth on the website in the comment section. Let me just say so on the podcast for all to hear, not while I'm on the podcast.
Yes, Chelsea. And I mean, free reign.
And I mean, if Morgan and Chelsea do a My Little Pony or Equestria Girls, I don't know or care the difference between the two. I will not be present because I.
How about this?
I would just be a downer. I'm sorry.
How about this? Once we get to $750 per month on Patreon, we are going to be doing animated movie commentaries. Now, if we make it to that point, would you commit yourself to do a commentary for at least one episode of Equestria Girls?
Yes, I will, but only if we'd have to record it in stereo so that people have the option of muting my remarks if they're going to get offended because they're like a huge My Little Pony fan. Okay. I owe them that.
Okay.
Oh, well, we'll just have one where it's Mason's commentary optional, and then another one where it's like full-on Mason commentary. All right, our next one is from Melissa Long.
Hey, guys, it's Melissa Long. I've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast for a few months now, and I absolutely love it. You know, not all my family and friends are really into animation, so this is like the place I can go and just nerd out about the thing I love most, animated movies. And I was so excited for Inside Out to be released that I wanted to make my first voicemail. I really enjoyed the movie. It was colorful, the animation was excellent, and it was such a unique take on, I think, a phenomenon that all of us think about, your emotions and your personality and how do all of those come to be. And I loved how it really developed the character of Riley and who she was just based on the emotion she had and the levels that they were present in her. And there were a lot of things that related to my life, so of course I cried. Every Pixar movie I cry. It's just a given. Anyway, that was my thoughts about the movie. It's not my favorite Pixar movie, but it was a classic and a really great one that I will watch again and again. And I just wanted to suggest that maybe you guys could review Hoodwinked at some point. I think it's kind of an underrated movie in the animation world, and I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on it. Anyway, thank you.
Hoodwinked. You know, that one might be along the veins of like Shrek, you know, when we talked about the anti-fairy tale. So, you know, maybe someday. It's not really that close on my radar.
My question is, did you really cry in Cars 2?
Cause... I cried for another reason.
Don't question but, her.
Hey,
oh,
go
sorry.
Ahead. Thanks for calling, Melissa.
Hello, Rotoscopers family. Ryan Prieto here with my review of Disney Pixar's Inside Out for your consideration. Starting off, and simply put, I love this film. It has joined the upper echelon Pixar movies for me, and I cannot give it enough praise. The depth of development of just the emotions, I did not anticipate. Joy and sadness gave me, as a viewer, the most satisfaction. How I just thought they were going to be, you know, single bead characters, but that the Pixar surprised me. Riley's outside world, I was so touched between the interactions of her and her parents and just the little kid things we all do and forget about. Bing Bong. Tragic character. I know Pixar has tread this territory before of, you know, growing up and growing past certain aspects of ourselves and leaving stuff behind. But that part, what killed me. When Joy also was holding the memory orbs, oh my gosh, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. I was so fond of the film by the ending credits when they gave us that one view into Dog's memory and Cat's emotions and stuff. And they so perfectly captured it. And just to backtrack, the lava short at the beginning, adorable. And like, fond is the best word to describe it. I was so fond of everything that occurred on screen. I need to sit with it to see if it's going to stay one of my favorites, but right now it's right up there. And I just like to thank you guys for listening. I'm going to give it like 5 out of 5 stars. Thank you very much.
So Ryan is one of our patrons, and he is so, so awesome.
Oh, what a
Chelsea
stud.
Actually had a call with him as part of her Rotoscopers patron perk, right?
Oh yeah, I had the perk of talking with Ryan. I'll just tell you that he's also a musician and he plays the banjo. He has a banjo in right next to his computer, and I thought that was awesome. But we had a really good discussion about Inside Out as well on our little Skype call, and so that was really fun.
All right, Jack Song, who I owe a Skype call because he is another one of our awesome patrons.
Hey, Rotoscopers. This is Jack calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Just want to give my quick thoughts on Inside Out. I really loved Inside Out for the most part. I enjoyed all the characters. I enjoyed the external characters, the visual look of the mind, especially the abstract thought scene where they change into these cubicle shapes and then a squiggly line. I really liked how they didn't have a straight antagonist. They could have done that with Bing Bong, but I'm so happy they did not. And I did like the ideas of joy and sadness being together and changing each other in a way. And I really liked the idea of Joy reminding me of an old camp counselor, this old chipper of a woman who always tries to turn everything sad into happiness, like some sort of strange kind of dictator. But overall, I really liked it, and I hope you guys speculate about sequels, because I really would love to see a sequel with this. It just leaves it open to it. Thanks. Bye.
Let's see. Should this film have a sequel? I don't think so, and I think that Pete Doctor feels the same. I think we should just left it at that. But yeah. Although we could see some cool, fun potential with puberty involved.
Ooh.
I think shorts would be fine. You know, like the Toy Story shorts. I could see those.
Like Mike's new car and stuff.
Yeah, that would be clever. So we shall see, according to Pete's doctor. He doesn't have any plans, but he said never say never.
Hi, my name's Matthew Hamilton. I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and short-time listener, first-time caller. I don't have anything of major substance to talk about, but I just wanted to say after listening to your podcast, my passion for animation has been reignited. A long period of time actually went past in which I stopped watching animated films and shows altogether, and I forgot how much fun and joy they would bring me when I used to watch them. And yeah, after watching them, after starting to watch them again recently, I feel that way again, which is great. Some films I've recently watched are Sword in the Stone, Porco Rosso, and Big Hero 6. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed all of those films. I love the enthusiasm and passion you guys have for animation, which is clearly evident in each podcast. You all are very articulate and coherent when giving your reviews, delving deeper into the underlying themes and messages portrayed, instead of giving a surface-level analysis, which is very refreshing to hear in an animation podcast. I am an aspiring concept artist, and I hope to one day design pre-production art for entertainment, animation, games, and film, so that's my dream. And whenever I'm working on my portfolio, I'm usually listening to the show, which actually helps me stay focused, which is a plus. I'm very thankful for stumbling across the show when I searched for animation related podcasts in iTunes, and I just wish you guys all the best for the future, and I hope you continue with the show for many years to come. Thank you.
Matthew, I love that you took the time in to call us, and even though you've only been listening to us for a short time, I really appreciate that. And I love your accent. I think it's awesome. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts podcast. I had a blast. I know Mason had a blast. Chelsea had a blast, because this movie is a blast. Inside Out. I can't wait to see it again. I can't wait to see it when it comes out on Blu-ray and Disney Movies Anywhere, and I can watch it anywhere. And I just was so impressed by this discussion that we were able to have about, and I think that's just the nature of this film. The film was that good that we were able to talk about it on like a higher level, and it just brought all these ideas and concepts to the forefront. So thank you everyone who sent in voicemails and who's been on the rotoscopers.com and giving us your thoughts and feedback about this film. If you want to give us your review of Inside Out, go to rotoscopers.com/98. That's where you can go and discuss this with us and discuss points of the podcast that you liked and didn't like, disagreed with. We love it. It is fun. The community is amazing. Now, if you want to tweet about this episode, use the hashtag AnimAddicts and AnimAddicts98. Also, we have been mentioning Patreon. We don't want to like hit you over the head with Patreon, but it's been about a month. They were talking about earlier the calls that we've been able to do. Anyone who joined us as a patron between when we started and June 30th got a 15-minute Skype call with the rotoscoper of their choice. And so by the time this comes out, that is ended. But you can still get in on the rotoscoper's action by being a patron. You can join us in Roto Nation, the Rotoscopers Facebook group. There is so much fun stuff happening with Roto Nation. So go to rotoscopers.com/patron to check that out. Also, guys, something really, really big is happening right now. Well, this month, basically, we are having a Rotoscopers meetup, and not just one of us, not just Chelsea and Morgan and anyone else. It is Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea all in one place.
That deserves a thunder tube.
Absolutely. For the first time ever, Chelsea and Mason are going to meet each other. I mean, that in itself is epic and amazing. The reason we're doing this is we are two episodes away from our 100th episode spectacular, and we really felt that we needed to come together and record some episodes and just do a bunch of videos and have a great time. And so this meetup we're going to have on Friday, July 25th. We're actually going to go to Don Bluth Front Row Theater here in Arizona. And we are going to go to a show. We have some tickets reserved. We're going to go. We're going to watch You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And obviously Don will be there and you'll be able to talk with him. You'll be able to talk with us. We'll go to dinner before. Details are at rotoscopers.com/meetup. Sign up because these tickets aren't going to last. We already know of people who are coming down from different states to come visit, and that's a true story, Chelsea. So if you wanted to meet Don or meet all three of us, this really is an opportunity. If you live in California, it's a quick weekend getaway. So definitely check it out and go to rotoscopers.com/meetup for all the details right there. That's all I have. I'm just so excited about the podcast and where things are going. Again, we've been so overwhelmed with the support and the love that you guys have given us. So thank you so, so much. We are so excited to just keep growing the podcast and bringing you so much more animation fun.
Until next time, guys,
we are the Rotoscopers. So,
all right, are we gonna just try this whole thing over?
Yeah, Chelsea, record.
Mm-hmm. Recording.
Okay, check. And Mason, speak.
Everybody, Mason, speak. Hulk, smash. Let's see. We have our main character, an emotion called Joy, who is effervescent. Who is evanescence? Who is effervescent?
Sorry.
Who is effervescent? Golly. Effervescent. Dang it. Effervescent. That's hard.
Effervescent.
All right. We have our main character, an emotion called Joy, who is effervescent. Dang it. I can't do it.
Scent, not zent.
I know. I'm trying. I literally thought that. Okay. How old is Riley by the time the film starts?
11. 14?
12? 13?
11.
11. Okay. I'm a horrible Pixar fan for not knowing her age, apparently.
Yeah.
Hey, but imagine how cool it's going to be to record all three of us at the same place.
I know. The dynamic is going to be so much just cooler, better.
I mean, we should do like two episodes.
I think we should do
it. There's just so much to do in so little time.
So while Chelsea's away, we were trying to figure out what should we do for the 100th episode. Should we pick a movie or should it be more just going over the years or just talking about high level stuff or the show? I don't know.
I don't know.
We are the Rotoscopers.
Woo.
We need like a 90s superhero theme song. Rotoscopers, they're our hero. They are going to turn us to... I'm not a very good rapper.
Possibly.
That translation means no. Trust me, I've done that many times myself. Yeah, okay.
Possibly.
Okay, what else you got?